Hello and welcome again to the TCB Podcast. This is episode 6. I am your host, Tim D-Block, a.k.a. Timmy. And joining me this evening is David Coleman, a.k.a. The Cyborg.
Happy Sunday, boys and girls.
Also joining us is Brooks Parker, a.k.a. Subber 10.
Brandon Lyon equals the perennial white flag.
And joining us again is Sean Feist, a.k.a. Native Astro.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
So we're going to forego the getting to know the host this week because I think we have definitely a lot to talk about. First is the baseball stories of the week. And I think the biggest topic, most recent, is Fulchino going to OKC, Nari Rodriguez going to the bullpen, and Lyles to start this upcoming Thursday. So what do we think about this? Good move, bad move, or eh?
I'd say it's probably a good move. I mean, let's be honest. Fulchino's not really lighting it up in the pen. I think he's sitting at, over a 4 ERA, and his whip's like 1.5. So, if anything, if this does nothing more than get him on the correct path, you know, I think it's a good move.
If we're going to keep Lyles in the major league rotation, then, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the best bet. Fulchino's probably doing, aside from Brandon Lyon, he's doing possibly, arguably the worst of the rest of the relievers. Really, your only other options to send down are going to be guys like Del Rosario and Fernando Rodriguez. And I think Fernando Rodriguez is doing a pretty good job. And so I think he's going to be a guy that we can actually going to be able to count on the next few years in our bullpen. So I think keeping it up is probably going to be your best bet.
Yeah, nobody's in the bullpen right now is untouchable. So with the possible exception of Mark Melanson, and we'll get into that a little more later, I think the bullpen has been such a train wreck this year that anybody can be moved out of there. And I don't think you'll get a lot of outrage from fans. But the bigger question is whether Lyles deserves to be in the majors right now. And in his first two starts, you saw kind of in the Cubs start, he definitely proved, yeah, he's a guy that can pitch in the majors. And then he just got bombed against the Padres and kind of was in between. He was better than he was against the Padres, a lot better. And he may have been as good as he was against the Cubs on Saturday. And that's something that, you know, is encouraging. And definitely I want to see him get more starts because, let's face it, at this point in the season, the Astros aren't playing for the pennant. They're playing to see what they have in this team. And Lyles is the big question mark. What do they have? What is he going to be able to do the next couple of years? What does he need to learn to become a better pitcher in the future? And that's all stuff that I don't think he can learn in AAA necessarily. I'd like to see him have some more starts in AAA just to kind of get a little more polished, but he's proven he can get big league hitters out right now. And until that stops, I think he's in the rotation.
I think a lot of it, when you're looking at the results Lyles had, is you have a lack of scouting reports for the first game. Then at the second game, the Padres, obviously they've had one start to go off where they could really formulate how they're going to approach Lyles. And then with the third game, you kind of saw where Lyles adjusted to what people are going to adjust to him. So, I mean, right now you're still having an adjustment period, so you can't really draw off too much off of his results at this point. Yeah, you do need a larger sample size for, you know, more starts to really evaluate him. And I agree that, yeah, this is the time where we're really going to be able to, we can see what we have with him. But at the same time, is he's not, I think that he hasn't developed as much as he could. That's why I want to see him in AAA, because he can develop pitches better and in more situations in AAA than he can doing it against major league hitters.
I'm with you, Brooks. I'd rather see him take all the rest of this year in AAA and spend time, spend the beginning of next year in AAA and then call it up after the Super 2 status doesn't come into play anymore. And, I mean, you just get another year out of that. I don't really see any reason for him to be up now, but I'm also not really all that opposed about it either.
Well, I think, like, his lack of a development, it's not more, his pitch, I mean, yeah, he probably needs to develop his pitches a little bit more, but I think what we'd like to see is him physically develop a little bit more. I mean, he's only 20, and once he starts to get a little bit older, a little bit stronger, that's only going to add to his repertoire. He's getting by right now on just pure, it's not stuff, it's just, you know, he's just flat out pitching. I mean, yeah, he doesn't have plus stuff. He knows how to pitch.
There's a reason for his struggles right now is he's just missing his spots.
Yeah, and you know what Sean was saying about the fact that he's a pitcher is exactly why I think the Astros called him up and had such confidence that he could get it done, is that he understands how to be a pitcher a lot better than guys his age normally do. I mean, we talked about this a little bit recently in one of the podcasts. I can't remember which one it was, but if Lyles were out in this, if he was in this draft class this last week, he would have been probably a top 10 pick with the way he's developed and his pitches. I mean, the only thing you don't have to like about him is his fastball velocity. And, you know, he throws that two-seamer so well to induce ground balls that it's probably the worst of his four pitches, and it's still a pretty good pitch. And, you know, it's not going to be a pitch he gets by with. He's not missing bats with it. But if that's the pitch that he needs to work on the most, that's not going to be something he does in the minors. That's something that's going to come with maturity. And why are you sending a guy to the minors to mature when he can get big league hitters out? I mean, I know that there's all – I don't like him being in the majors because I worry about his arm. You know, I worry about all the stuff that you would normally worry about with a young guy. But at the same time, he's getting the job done, and I think until he doesn't, you know, we shouldn't doubt that he should be in the majors.
Well, I think that's more of a fault of, you know, how much we have at the upper levels. You know, in a perfect world, you know, the Astros probably wouldn't call him up. But since, you know, there's very little at the higher levels, like the Double A and the Triple A, as far, you know, outside of Keuchel, that probably had a lot to do with him getting called up so early. Yeah, he can pitch and probably get through it, but I think even the Astros probably wouldn't want him doing on-the-job training or on-the-job development, you know, in a perfect world. But
yeah, and I really honestly don't think the Astros think of it like that. Like I said, I think they've got such a high respect for his feel for the game already at this point, even as young as he is, that they didn't doubt that he could do it in the major leagues. The question is, how good is his, you know, what is his ceiling going to be? And that's something that we're going to have to figure out when he does develop a little more. You know, when he does add velocity to his fastball, if that's going to happen, if he does learn how to feel those pitches a little bit better. But that's, you know, that's something that's going to happen no matter what. And it happens for a lot of pitchers over their major league career anyway. Roy Oswalt was constantly adding pitches, you know, tweaking his repertoire as he kind of became for the pitcher he was when he first came up to what he was when we traded him last year.
But when Roy came up, I believe we were in a different circumstances. I believe we are a semi-competitive team at the time, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just different circumstances. I get where we look at it and just, you know, the timing was kind of odd. Why bring him up now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing really to, you know, prove, right? If we could have done it all over again, I would have said, look, you know, just keep him down, let him develop more. This team is literally going nowhere.
Well, I think he's a sign of hope from Ed Wade to the fans. That, you know, a lot's gone wrong so far in the season, and just like the Jason Castro call up, we're all just going to be watching him, you know, pitch when it's his day to pitch. I believe the attendance for his home has gosh, I'm drawing a blank. His first home start was like 30,000, and we've been seeing low 20,000 numbers. So there's certainly some interest in him.
I think that 32,000 it might be up for debate, because whenever the fans start to do the tomahawk chop and cheer Brandon Lyon, something is up. Even Scooby Doo and his gang could figure that one out.
Well, I think the Braves fan would have come out regardless and been doing the tomahawk chop. It just would have been way more of them than the actual Astro fan.
It was crazy. I mean, I've never seen it. Like when Brian McCann hit the walk off or the home run, it sounded like a home game for the Braves.
Yeah, it's been. Did you go to the game, or were you at the game?
No, I live in Northern California, so
Oh, okay.
I watch it all on demand.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and you know, that's always how it's been with both the Braves and the Cubs. For some reason, those two fan bases just draw fans to Minute Maid Park in the Astrodome before that. It's crazy. And I think it's partly because they've got a more national fan base because they're, you know, the Braves used to be on TNT or TBS or
TBS.
Whichever. TBS, yeah. And the Cubs, WGN was, you know, syndicated across the country. So they have a lot more fans that, you know, kind of picked them up because they weren't interested in baseball and got to see all their games. But,
they always seem to be in competition too. Obviously, Bobby Cox left this last year, but you know they're constantly in competition, and you're going to get fans all over the country if you're constantly winning.
Well, that's what happens with the Red Sox. I mean, how many Red Sox hats do you see around when people probably never even been to Boston?
I've met people.
And let's be honest too. There's a lot of open seats at Minute Maid Park these days.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who is going to a Giants game, I think, later this year. And he's like, oh, my God, we had no problem getting seats. I thought they were going to be sold out. I was like, yeah, no. You could probably get very close seats.
Well, does Chipper Jones's dad live in Houston or something? Because I always see him at Astro home games when they're playing.
I believe they have a ranch somewhere around there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think Chipper said that in a post-game interview, that he really enjoys coming to Minute Maid just for that reason, that it's the one time that his parents actually get to come and see him.
Yeah, they had some pretty killer seats, too. I think they're right behind the visitor dugout on the first row.
Well, he's got some money to buy seats like that, so. But one thing that it really made me think that I've been thinking about in this Atlanta series so far that I wanted to ask you guys about is, with the exception of Friday's game, the last two have been pretty close. And Atlanta is a good team. I mean, you know, looking at their playoff odds, they've got some of the best playoff odds in the NL East. And, you know, even when they were bad, they still looked like they were going to be good. And the Astros have played them close. And I think we'd all agree that the Astros are devoid of real talent or a chance to contend. So has baseball reached that level of parity where, you know, we can – even though that we're really bad and one of the worst teams in the league, we can still hang with a team that's pretty good like Atlanta? Or was it just kind of the matchups in this series? You know, are the Astros really as bad as we think in a level? Or is it just, you know, parity kind of taking over?
I certainly think there's a lot of parity. I think the difference between a competing team and a losing team is very minimal. I think, especially if you look at how close the games have been for the Astros this year, up to a point. I mean, obviously this last week hasn't been good, but not in too many games, and they're considered, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. You have a couple bounces this way or that, or, you know, just a couple different plays made, and the Astros, you know, are a 500 team or better.
A lot of it, yeah, I agree with both of y'all that really there's just a minimal amount of difference between, you know, your contending teams in Houston. But a lot of it really comes down to the consistency. Ed Wade kind of touched on that, and I don't really like quoting Ed Wade about kind of this kind of stuff. But he's right. We've been very inconsistent this year. And, you know, if you look at it, had some of these guys been a little bit more consistent throughout this season, we would be a lot better. But it comes down to consistency. Can we do it day in, day out? And really, that's kind of what I feel about this series, is that we were a little bit more consistent. We were able to put it together and for a little bit of time throughout the game to keep it close. But no, I don't see us being close to contending, but at the same time, it's very minimal as far as the difference is. It's just really a few points here and there on on-base percentage, slugging percentage, and stuff like that, that between a bad player and a good player.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, but there are those occasions where some teams just give other team fits for whatever reason.
That's another reason why I don't want to see the Astros just go all fire sale happy at the trade deadline. I'd like to see, you know, us keep Bourne and Pence. I wouldn't be too upset if Myers or even Rodriguez were traded, but I'd certainly like to keep some of the younger guys.
Well, you know, sometimes just, you know, starting from a clean slate might be the best way to go. Maybe they've gotten so comfortable in the routine that a total shakeup is needed. You know, I think it's still up for debate that, you know, if we trade Bourne or do we trade Pence, you know, whatever. But sometimes, you know, rosters need a little shakeup just for that fresh start.
Oh, you just angered Tim. That is like his least favorite idea in the world, shaking up this roster just wholesale.
Well, I think if you're trading, you know, do you want to rebuild the farm system, or do you want to be competing in a few years? Because you can't do both. If you trade Pence and Bourne, you're rebuilding the farm system. But if you trade them away, you're also taking away the possibility that this team could be competing in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I've never been a fan of the Astros mindset that, you know what, we're going to do both. You can't do both. You either commit to one, or, I mean, you have to commit to one to be successful. We can't try to compete and rebuild the farm at the same time, to a certain extent, right? You can make gradual steps, but if you're going to commit, let's fully commit to one. And I think that's where the fans get upset, is because we see what's really going on, and it just, I don't know.
But could they have already committed, though, by trading Roy Oswalt and Berkman last year? I mean, the farm system is getting infused with youth already, so if they trade Pence and Bourne, how much does that really add? And there's no guarantee that you get any kind of return on that. Look at I think we talked about this in the last podcast, Miguel Cabrera trade, where they got three top prospects, and the Marlins really didn't get much in return from that. And you got Miguel Cabrera, almost a perennial MVP candidate, playing for another team now.
Yeah, there's no real guarantees in trades. I mean, with prospects, that's where you see teams a lot these days, rather than go for that high ceiling prospect, they go for the young major league talent player and, you know, one or two other prospects.
Well, and that Roy Oswalt trade, I think, is a great example of what bridging the gap between what Tim's talking about and what Sean's talking about, in that the Astros got a couple high-level prospects that were major league ready, and, you know, even a guy that had some major league experience in J-Hap and Brett Wallace, and we've seen how he's been able to contribute right away. And yet they still got the Jonathan Villar, who's a little bit further along, but is obviously one of their top prospects now. So I think that's what any trades that we'd have to do would have to bring back a major league piece. Or you'd trade away a guy like Pence or Bourne when you have a minor leaguer that's ready to kind of fill in and you want to see what they've got. You know, I don't think that the Astros are going to be too rash in trading those guys away before they've got something in place to, you know, fit into the lineup. And I think the other thing that, you know, this whole argument is about is making the case for Lyles to stay in the majors longer. You know, if we're, you know, not that far away, you know, in the parity of the league, then why not give Lyles the chance to learn how to be a major leaguer, to learn what it's like to be in the major leagues and the grind and what he's going to have to do and working with Arnsberg and the video room and all that now. And so when the Astros are ready to contend in 2013, you know, maybe at the end of next year, who knows how they shake up their roster and what's going to happen in the next couple of years. But get him ready now. You know, limit his workload, however they're going to do it to prevent injuries, but make sure that he's ready to be consistent and be good when they're ready to contend.
And that's kind of what I was kind of leading to several weeks ago when I was talking about Lyles pitching a few games while waiting for Wandy to get back and then send him back down. And then at the trade deadline, we could trade off a guy like Wandy Rodriguez or Brett Myers. And this whole time that Lyles was just giving Ed Wade the assurance that he has somebody to eat up those innings once we do trade that guy off. Because now that we do have another guy that's able to pitch in the rotation at the major league level, that is a prospect, we don't have to worry about, okay, well, if we trade off this pitcher, who's going to eat those innings? We know we have a guy to eat those innings now.
Well, I just don't want to get into the cycle where, you know, it's Pence and Bourne this year. Who's to say it's not Brett Wallace and J-Hap next year?
I mean, that's true. I mean, look, let's be honest. Bad teams go through this cycle year in and year out. Until we actually get the boat, you know, headed in the right direction, it just could be a constant topic of discussion year in and year out.
Well, see, and that's my thing, is I think the boat's already heading in that direction. I think the fire sale was last year. I was hoping for a fire sale back in 2008 when the Astros had a lot of value in like Miguel Tejada and a couple other pieces that, you know, that they didn't trade off.
I mean, I think there's probably more. Yeah, there's probably more they could skim off the top to share with. They don't have to go the route of, you know, trading a Hunter Pence or Michael Bourne. They could very well just maybe just trade Brett Myers and Jeff Kappinger and, you know, be done with it.
Yeah, and I'd rather see those guys traded, but, you know, keep the young guys around, especially if we want any kind of hope to be competing in 2 or 3 years, we're going to need Pence and Bourne around.
But at the same time, if somebody comes a knocking and just knocks us over with a package for Wandy, I think they have to listen. We're just not in any position where, you know what, so-and-so is untouchable.
Well, and if you listen to the arguments that we're making, which I think are all very solid and is right in line with what the front office is probably thinking, it really seems like the Astros are not going to trade either of their outfielders this year because their depth in the outfield is in the minor leagues right now. You know, they've got their future center fielder, right fielder, however you want to call it, and guys like George Springer once he signs, Ariel Elvando, and Austin Waits. You know, those guys are kind of the next wave. And so what does it serve for Ed Wade to trade away an outfielder, maybe get a young guy like, you know, Dominic Brown or somebody like that to plug into the lineup now because he's ready and because that's a pretty good return on whatever trade he makes. But that's blocking the prospects that you've got that are coming pretty soon. So I think it's kind of counterintuitive for them to make that trade. But with Wandy or Myers, you know, they've got a guy in Jordan Lyles that's already up. They've got a guy in Dallas Keuchel that's showing that he's maybe more and more ready by the end of the year to contribute at the major league level. And, you know, that they can slot in a minor leaguer pretty easily. And so the return they get from Wandy or Myers can be whatever they want to kind of fill in their holes. They don't need to necessarily get an outfielder or a starting pitcher or something like that. They can go out and get the best package available, basically.
Well, a lot of it, too, could just be, you know what, let's shed more payroll. I mean, I hate to say it, but maybe they do want to make a run at a big free agent next year. Let's just say for argument's sake that, you know what, Jim Crane wants to make a splash and he just goes out on the free agent market and throws big dollars at Jose Reyes. Just whether it's the right move or wrong move, you know, maybe that's the way he wants to approach it.
Well, and what would be wrong about that? You know, Reyes is still a young guy. He plays a premium position. He's shown that he's over his health problems. I don't like the idea of committing Carlos Lee-level money to a guy, and I think that's my only big problem with it, you know? If it's not about the money, though, and if the budget's not a concern, why not go get a guy like that? And like Tim says, why not try to contend next year? Why not try to contend, you know, then instead of waiting 2 or 3 years down the road for these prospects to come up?
Yeah, I think we all assume that, you know what, after the 2008 draft, you know, we're all like, you know what, wait till 2011 when this draft class gets here. Well, you know, now it's 2011 and we're saying, you know what, let's wait till 2013 when the Lexington class gets here, as well as like George Springer and those guys. Even up to 2013, it's going to be another 2 years before we actually compete with that class. I don't think it's going to be an instant impact.
I think once Carlos Lee comes off the books, the Astros will have a lot more flexibility, especially with the way Wade structured all the contracts now that, you know, nothing's really killing the Astros. So they'll.
I agree. When Carlos Lee comes off the roster, they would definitely have a lot more flexibility. Literally and, yeah, dollar figuratively.
Yeah, I even think next year they'll have quite a bit of money, too, just because of the fact that Drayton was preparing this team for sale. So he's cutting payroll, so they should have a little bit more payroll to play with next year.
Yeah, it's really hard to gauge what direction Jim Crane is going to take this team in. Who knows? You know, maybe he comes in and just wants to throw an off-the-wall idea out there. You know what? Rather than sticking Brett Wallace at first base for the next 5 years, why don't we move him to left field and let's go after a guy like Prince Fielder? I mean, who knows? I don't think they'll do that, but... who knows? You know, a lot of times when owners come in, either they want to make an instant impact and do something drastic, or they just wait and evaluate for a couple years before they do anything. Yeah. And I don't see Jim Crane as a wait and evaluate type guy.
Well, and if you go back to Drayton McLean, I mean, his one of his first moves was to sign Greg Swindell and Drabek, and both of those signings failed horribly for the Astros, and that kind of soured Drayton on any big spending on free agent pitchers. And I think that that's really the thing we're talking about. I personally don't want to see the Astros spend a bunch of money on a free agent pitcher. That's Brandon Lyon is a good example of that. But any number of starters, you try to get value there. You don't try to go out and buy the highest priced guy on the market. But position players, I think, are a little different. And I think that they can definitely, if you get, one of the best guys on the market and you can sign him to a reasonable deal that you're not crippled by his contract, like we are with Lee now, kind of, I think that that's something the Astros could definitely do starting next year or whenever Crane wants to spend the money. And I think it would make this team better and would give them a chance to compete soon. And let the prospects come up when they're ready, not when they're forced to try to get a competitive team.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We're so far off the path. we're going to go ahead.
Sorry, I hijacked your outline there, Tim.
No, that's fine. It was a good conversation. Let's actually move on to the draft. And we'll move into draft grades here shortly. But first, I think one thing I realized from this last draft, and Heck has a pattern. He's always taken with that first pick a position player, and then he takes a pitcher right after that. So, with all the speculation about Archie Bradley and all these pitchers and stuff, it's not that surprising that George Springer went to the Astros when you take a step back and look at the previous drafts.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I actually like that philosophy. If you think mm-hmm. about it, how many pitchers fail? And you're giving big money to a guy in the first round, at the top of the first round, and he may get injured in 2 years through no fault or talent of his own and never make the major leagues. Right. So, you go to the position players, that's a little safer. Injuries happen to everybody, sure, but there's a higher probability, however low that probability is, that a position player will make the major leagues than a pitcher. So you go with a guy like that, even a guy like Giovanni Meyer is got a better probability than Mike Foltynewicz just because of that injury factor and how pitchers pan out much less often than hitters do.
Yeah, I was just trying to think pitching talent in this year's draft. I was just thinking about how many of those pitchers are never going to see the major leagues. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of happy to see the Astros, take the second best hitting position player.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that at the time, but the Project Prospect is a really neat website that kind of takes an alternative view on scouting, and they developed this, very intense system of analyzing statistics of college players, and they named it the Rendon system after Anthony Rendon, and crunches all the numbers and shows you who's the best hitter in college, and Rendon has not surprisingly been the best hitter in college the last couple of years, but I think Springer was number two this last year, and that's I don't know how much college stats really matter in the scheme of things and how good a player he's going to be in the pros, but it certainly was something that I was like, oh, cool. I like seeing that. He's probably the second best hitter in this draft class, and we got him at number 11, which is pretty cool.
Well, I'd read multiple outlets. A lot of people were saying that Springer, out of all the draftees, probably had one of the highest ceilings in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I read that too.
Yeah, a lot of
people 5'2" guy.
Yeah, a lot of outlets said that he has the highest upside of anybody, really, and which he does have that higher upside as with him being playing up the middle, and even Anthony Rendon is just Anthony Rendon has a much higher floor. And he has a mm-hmm. much more likely ability to reach his ceiling, being that Springer is so raw, he doesn't have that real assuredness that he's going to be able to reach that ceiling like Rendon, which is why Rendon was so much more highly coveted than Springer.
Well, and I think raw is, I know what you're saying, but I think that that's kind of the wrong conveyance for what Springer is. He's more raw than Rendon is, but he's certainly not raw in the terms of, you know, some of the high school hitters that went in this draft class are raw. I mean, he's a pretty advanced hitter, and I think he's only got he hasn't reached his potential yet, and he's got right. ways to go to get there. But, you know, I like I say, I know what you were going with by saying that, but calling him raw when seeing what he does is just a little like, oh my gosh, that's I've really come to really like that pick of Springer in the first round, even though I didn't see it coming at all. It's grown on me quite a bit.
Whatever, I picked it. Didn't you call it like right before the pick?
But I didn't. When you think about the number of words I wrote in the week and a half leading up to the draft, and I never even considered Springer for that pick. I mean, come on, like it was a surprise.
Still called
to me.
It, and we've got it recorded, so
still surprising.
What is this humble crap?
David is humble, if anything else.
No, you don't say.
My reference to Raw was more along the lines of in reference to him being a college guy. No, yeah. He's definitely not Raw versus a high school guy, but he is a lot more Raw versus any other college bat that would be a first, second round consideration.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm watching the UConn-South Carolina game, and I saw George Springer overrun a dive play. Like, he dove for the ball, and it hit, like, his wrist because he just overran it. So I think that kind of fits into the raw evaluation people have of him.
That guy's got a big motor. I watched the game yesterday, and I think he had, like, a little bloop single, or he drilled a single to, I don't think it was left center. And the guy, he slid into second base, and then he slid home. I mean, that guy has got a big-time motor. Mm-hmm. You can see where the Hunter Pence comparisons come in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would probably run at 500 miles an hour just to get a cup of water.
Yeah, and, you know, I have been talking to this guy who covering George Springer for the last year or so at UConn, and, you know, got to talk to him in the locker room, and I'm going to post more of his comments on the site, I think tomorrow, which is Monday, which may be after this podcast posts, but anyway, you'll see it. And what the thing that I liked the most about his comments about Springer is he said he's the first guy there every day working. He's the last guy running sprints at night after everybody's gone home. You know, he loves baseball. He works really hard. Even though he's that good, he's going to put in 110% effort. And I think that's the reason people like Pence so much is because he's an effort guy that's in the major leagues. Even though he's the best player on the team, he's still the hardest working player on the team. And that, you know, something about that just resonates with fans when you see a guy that doesn't take his gifts for granted and still works just as hard as everybody else on the team to get to where he's at.
And that's kind of like why everybody calls him a very high makeup guy. And it's just kind of been a theme among the college guys that Heck has really drafted over the years, most notably with Jason Castro. Castro has that work ethic. He puts the time in. And that he's already, even throughout this year, even though he's not even going to play this season, he's still been sitting in the film room with Arnsberg to really understand the process. He has that makeup to be a team leader because he puts forth that effort and he's going to lead by example. And if you're going to build around a guy like Jason Castro or even with George Springer, Hunter Pence, those are the type of people you want to build around early on, guys that you're going to draft, the very high-profile makeup guy.
Well, it certainly makes it easier to like a team with those players on it. You know, there's certainly guys like what we found out about Roger Clemens, where I have fond memories of Clemens being on the Astros, but after some of the stuff came out about him, you know, it's kind of like I don't feel as good about rooting for him when he was a member of the Astros as I do in retrospect. Because, you know, you spend so much emotional energy on a team, you'd like the players on that team to be at least a little worth it, you know?
Definitely.
All right, well, let's move off to George Springer. Who's the draftee that's catching your guys' eyes in this draft?
Aside from Springer, probably going to be Jack Armstrong. The guy has such a huge upside with that fastball. It's just whether or not he's going to be healthy enough to display it in Houston. I'm definitely I follow the Cape a little bit. I check it maybe once a week when it gets going. sometimes even less than that. But it's definitely going to be a league that I'm definitely going to keep track of this year with Jack Armstrong pitching, just to see how he does and if he's going to be able to be healthy, and how big of a bonus and overslot that bonus is going to be if he signs.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the Jack Armstrong. I mean, his last start, I think I saw numbers. He was hitting the upper 90s, like 95, 96, 97. I think he touched 98 a couple of times. You can just call that gas. I mean, that's probably the one of the prospects that I'm pretty high on. Even a guy like Chase Davidson. Here's a guy that we drafted in 2008 in the third round. And this year we got him in the 41st round. To me, that's an interesting pick.
Yeah, and you know, there's guys like Blake Ford from Lamar. You know, I talked to the Lamar coach this week after he got drafted, and it talked a lot about makeup. You know, we were just talking about how much a player's makeup can determine things. Really liked the way he worked, and he was not the ace of that staff and not really expected to be their Friday night starter this year. And because three guys got injured before him, was thrust into that role and became a really good pitcher for that team. And so, you know, kind of earned the respect of that whole university and coaching staff, and it paid off. You know, he was drafted in the 44th round, so expectations are not really high for him. But I think that he becomes an interesting guy to add to the system. But if we're looking at a comparison to somebody like Ben Heath, I think that Nick Tropiano can certainly be that guy. I think he's an advanced college arm that could move through the system pretty quickly. You know, I think he would probably stay at Tri-City for the entire season, but I wouldn't be surprised if, because of injuries, they called him up to Lexington, maybe to Lancaster to get a couple starts. You know, he's got the talent that he could really put some eye-popping numbers up and force the Astros to move him along faster than some of the other players in this class.
He's kind of a right-handed Dallas clone.
Yeah.
He's a workhorse. It doesn't have plus stuff. He just gets by on location, off-speed stuff. Plus, I think he has a plus change.
Yeah, and what I was reading, it sounds like he's got better stuff than Keuchel does. I don't know if that's true or not, but that seems to be the consensus that I've on things that I've read. And, you know, let's face it, he went in the fifth round. He may have gone higher than that in another draft class. We've talked about how deep this class was in pitching. You know, in another year, if he was a junior and came out next year, he may go, in the, you know, into the second, middle of the third round, something like that. So, you know, he's certainly got the talent to move pretty quickly. And that's what makes him interesting for me.
Well, I'm actually going way off the board with mine. And I'm going to go with Matt Duffy, who has a common theme with J.D. Martinez, Wade Miller, all 20th round selections by the Astros.
Don't forget Dan Adamson. I like that guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, his numbers aren't that great, but he was also dealing with a whole lot the last couple years. His older sister had Fanconi anemia. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's a blood disease that leads to failure to produce bone marrow. And she's been battling the illness her entire life. And she died over the summer last year. So, you know, dealing with that and trying to play baseball can be kind of rough. So I'm really rooting for that guy. And, J.R. Tolles, he's another 20th round selection. So the Astros seem to have pretty good luck with that 20th round selection. So I'm hoping that he does something special this year in the minor leagues, because I believe he's already signed.
Yeah, I think he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's one of the people that signed. So I'll certainly be watching him, and I'd like to think I have a pretty good track record with these kind of things. I don't know what it was, but something just drew me to Ben Heath last year, and he kind of took off last year. So hopefully that trend continues.
Well, and Duffy certainly is interesting. You know, one thing he's got going for him is he played in the SEC. You know, he saw a lot of really interesting pitchers. He saw that entire Vandy staff. I think there were a couple Florida pitchers that went pretty high in this one. You know, he's seeing high-level pitchers, high-level fastballs, the kind of stuff that he's going to see when he gets into the minors. And, you know, that the full-season teams, the Lexingtons, the Lancasters, even up to Corpus Christi. He's probably going to have to refine his stuff, but he's not going to have as big an adjustment as some of the other people. So he could definitely come out and be the kind of fast starter guy that you've seen with guys like Adamson and JD Martinez. I don't know a lot about him, obviously, because, you know, 20th round pick, that kind of thing. But I certainly see what you're talking about, that there's potential for him to and you know, if you look at the system, we don't have a lot of third base prospects.
David, yep, definitely.
David Flores is still getting time. I know. I can't believe that David Flores is still getting regular time at third base. It just blows my mind.
Does Jimmy Paredes become the best third base prospect in the Astros farm system right now?
He's well, not a prototypical, but yeah, kind of, yeah. Because he's more most advanced.
It's either him or Mike Wasnicka. I mean, it's a toss-up, I think, at this point between the two of them.
Could be Jose Carlos Thompson, depending on where he ends up. I don't know. There's something about that guy that I just really like. He's very versatile, but at the same time, he's also a very polished hitter.
And he's got three names, which is always popular.
Yeah.
Well, what is he, a shortstop or second base?
Both.
Yeah.
But he sees time at third occasionally.
Well, I think just about any shortstop is going to see time at second base and third base in the minors.
In our system, especially, yeah.
Yeah, I think all shortstops in the minor leagues across all of baseball are versatile. Because they kind of have to be.
Yeah, even Kobe Clemens is seeing time this year at third. And yeah, that just goes back to our whole point is we really don't have a lot of depth at the hot corner.
Okay, so I'm going to throw out another hypothetical that's not on Tim's list of for this podcast, which is going to make him angry. But... Is Chris Johnson doing poorly enough for the Astros to call up Kobe Clemens, install him at third base, and see what he can do?
No.
No, because Kobe Clemens would, you know, you're kind of gambling there, because Kobe Clemens could probably be worse defensively than Chris Johnson is.
He would be.
I think that would be a wash. If they were going to go any route, it would probably give Matt Downs more time at third.
Yeah. I think that's the most probable route. But I think that Clemens is an interesting route that I think they may explore in September, you know, just to see if he's going to have enough to get it done. You know, if his bat's good enough to stick in the majors, do they try to find a position for him? And can he play third, you know, passably enough to get his bat into the lineup? Because let's face it, the Astros aren't exactly the 27 Yankees in the batting order. They could use a little more pop.
And my reaction probably is going to be a little overblown. I really do like Kobe Clemens. I really did. I got the chance to meet him after one of the games here in Nashville. And he's a really nice guy, but he's not going to be good at third base. He doesn't have the range. I don't know if it's the reads he gets or what. He's not good defensively. Even at first base, he's not an above average first baseman in my opinion. But I mean, obviously, I haven't seen a whole lot of him. It's a really small sample size. Maybe one or two plays as far as range even. In a game that you get to see for a first baseman sometimes, but I didn't get the feel that he would be good defensively at third base. Sure, he could play it in a pinch, what first baseman can't. Even Albert Pujols played a whole game at first base. But I like the bat. I do like the bat.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that would necessarily be a good, attractive option at third base.
Well, I think if they were going to keep Kobe, or if they were going to put Kobe Clemens up there, I think they would have rather had kept Bill Hall and put him over there.
I think if we are going to see Kobe in Houston, it's going to be as a poor defensive utility player that gets gets a chance to get in the DH spot consistently during interleague play or in left field.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, you know, we've pretty much put everybody in the that's doing anything in the minor leagues in left field once Carlos Lee's released. But
exactly.
You know, Kobe Clemens has a good shot at being that that left fielder. I don't know. I just throw that out there because Johnson is struggling. You know, we've talked about him getting sent down before, and with the Astros playing him third base, maybe they're thinking that might be a possibility down the road. I still don't like the idea, but I'd like to see Clemens in the majors and see what he's got.
I would like to see how his bat played in the majors. That's for sure. I do agree on that. I want to see if the power would translate and how big his strikeout rate would inflate or what would happen once he gets there to the majors.
All right, yeah, I'm cutting off the Kobe Clemens talk right now. We have better things to get to than talking about Kobe Clemens over and over again. So we're going to move on to grades for the draft. David, if you want to go first.
Yeah, I think it's a solid B+. You know, I think trying to grade a draft class is pretty impossible because I think my grade would be much lower if Jack Armstrong does not sign. And I think that's going to be really key to this draft class. But I talked about this a little bit on SB Nation Houston, that I really like the way that this front office has built the system. You know, and I think this was kind of the last draft piece into that system because they got so much power across the board. You know, power arms, power fastballs, power bats, exactly what they've been lacking up to this point. You know, how many times have we complained about these athletic, toolsy guys that aren't going to hit for much power? Now they've got those guys. And I think that was a really important piece of the minor league system to add. I think it's very encouraging to see that. And we'll have to see how these guys pan out, which is why I kind of hedged my bets and gave it a B+. But so far, so good, I think.
And I almost have to go in a different direction. I think my grade would probably be a B. And I thought last year was going to be that last draft where it was going to be full of interesting picks and that we would actually start to see a lot more riskier moves this year because we've started seeing the depth now with the last three drafts. And it turns out this year we've went the opposite direction almost, and we had a lot of signability picks with, I mean, you could call it signability or the fact that they just liked a lot of the college guys. And I could go either way with that. But that's what kind of confused me was we've done a lot of high school guys in the last 3 years. We've gone upside. Mm-hmm. And this year we didn't do that. We did definitely get upside with Springer, Armstrong. But at the same time, we've got so many college guys and so many senior college guys in the first, you know, 20 rounds. It was just kind of surprising to me. So I'm not sure how that's going to play out. I can kind of see that philosophy where, okay, now we've got these guys with higher floors, so we can push the guys that have the higher upside that may not be developing because they know they have their spot locked up. But I think really for me to see if that's going to be really what they're trying to do, it's going to take a year or two to see how that's going to play out. So I'm really kind of I'm not real sure on this draft yet.
Yeah, I have to agree. My grade for them would be a B. I'm really hesitant to go anything higher than that just because the little book of work that we have on these guys, we're not going to really get a good range or get a good read on these guys, you know, for a year or two. And I just don't know how much they've really changed their draft approach. I think a lot of it was, I think even Bobby Heck said that towards the later rounds, they started to draft based on need because they simply did not want to block somebody that was already in the system. You know, I think they looked at, you know, we're going to have Ariel Avando. Do we really want to draft a young high school outfielder that could block Avando's time? I don't think anybody's going to block Avando's time, but I think they took that approach. And I just don't know if they've really change their approach. I think they're probably still drafting more to the slot recommendation pick than going for the best available, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling too, where they weren't really drafting guys that they already have some guys in the system. Like shortstop really seemed to be a spot, and even second base, where they didn't really push for a high profile guy. They didn't, I mean, really with shortstop being that we have VR, we have even Wyckoff and Meyer, Jose Carlos Thompson even, they just didn't push for up the middle guys for the infield, and that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, well, yeah, case in point, so in the second round, they take Adrian Hauser, but, you know, Daniel Norris was still on the board. Some can argue that probably the better pick would have been Daniel Norris. He might be a little bit harder to sign and is definitely going to get over slot. So,
are you sure Daniel Norris was still on the board? I thought he was taking a few picks before the Astros in the second round.
He went to Toronto. Later on in the second round.
Maybe I'm incorrect. I thought he went in the 40. Let me check that.
Yeah, I thought he went to Toronto after the Astros pick in the second round.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he was available, I believe. A lot of people were complaining about that, being that Norris was still available.
Yeah,
I think he was.
I remember a lot of people saying that they were annoyed that he and someone else they liked were taken.
In the third round.
Fact check. The third round or the second round?
I think it was the third round that they were annoyed that he was taken.
No, he went pick 74 to the Blue Jays. So he was there when we picked.
All right. Yeah. You're right. I'm wrong. Carry on.
So, yeah, I still think they're probably going more the slot recommendation pick than going for the best available, regardless of what they say. I mean, they've done it years.
Surprised.
Yeah, I mean, and they're pretty consistent with that.
And that may not even be an issue next year, you know? If it's collectively bargained so that everybody has to go slot, then that's not really a failing of this draft class. And I still, you know, I think the Jack Armstrong pick was really not like the Astros front office at all for a lot of reasons, and one of them being the signability. You know, he's going to be a tough sign away from Vanderbilt simply because he fell to the third round when he's got first-round talent. So you're going to have to give him a pretty big contract to get him away and not go into the draft next year.
Well, it could be consistent with their third-round picks getting over slot. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see Ross Seton to Austin Waits to Jack Armstrong. He's probably going to get over slot money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I don't think that this front office definitely has a type of player that they like. I think that this year they went a little, or they had some high picks that went around that and, you know, provided some things that the system didn't have, which is what I was kind of alluding to. But overall, I think that, we pretty much know the kind of guys that Bobby Heck likes and the guys that he's going to be drafting. And, you know, that is what it is.
Well, let's move on to the other biggest story of the week, which was the realignment proposal with the Astros moving to the AL. I'm not as opposed to it as most people
think. Dumbest thing ever. Really?
It's not baseball.
I don't care to see. I'd rather see a hitter in the all hitters in the lineup rather than some dinky pitcher going up to bunt or do whatever. I could, you know, people say there's strategy to it, but, you know, there's still going to be strategy in baseball. I don't think it's really going to take away a whole lot. The detractor to that, though, is that they'd be, if they move to the AL West and they keep divisions.
Yeah, so if we take the DH out of it, let's just take that out of it for a second. Maybe a move to the AL is something that this organization needs, if only if it just brings the fans back for pure excitement, that you would have new teams coming into the park week in and week out, right? Maybe that's something this organization needs, is for the fans to get excited about baseball again.
Well, and you also think about the Rangers are so close that people could, you know, make the trip between the two stadiums.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that massacre every weekend.
Well, I'm not a fan of that because I think we'll lose a lot of Houston fans to the Rangers just because the Rangers are a lot better than the Astros right now.
Yeah.
So that could take a big hit, actually, to the Houston fan base.
Well, what's stopping the only them reason from doing that now, though?
They don't like the DH.
I like a winning ball club, but gosh, I just really hate the DH. I just can't root for that team. I can't switch. I'll stick with the Astros just because they got some silly pitcher batting ninth.
Personally, though, if we move to the DH, we have Carlos Lee being our DH, and I'd rather see Jordan Lyles hitting ninth instead of Carlos Lee.
I do have to admit, he is an interesting hitter. He does look like he knows what he's doing up there.
Here lately, yeah, that's only going to help us trade him. I think he's in the month of he's batting. What, I think he's up to 270 something.
Yeah, he's up. He's in the 270s, you know, and he's walking quite a bit too. So,
yeah, all right, he's up to his 10-year-old weight, so that's good.
But you know, and I think he's having that bounce back year that a lot of us figured he would.
Minus the power numbers.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever reach those power numbers but I think he can hit respectable. I'd say something in the 280 range and then maybe 20 to 25 home runs.
But I'd certainly love to see him at the DH spot and someone like Bourgeois out in, you know, field.
Well, it would definitely help solve, you know, where do we put JD Martinez?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In those later years.
Well, you know, we only got one more. We got a year and a half left with Carlos Lee, so we're almost there.
We're really considering putting the Astros in the American League. Is that what's happening right now in this podcast?
Yeah, that sounds like it was taken over.
I'm going to have to protest that. This is ridiculous. The only reason the Astros are even being considered for this is because they're terrible right now. If they were a good team, yeah, this would not even be an issue. And that's ultimately why I don't think this is going to go through, because the Astros have been a good team in the recent past. I mean, we're not talking about a team like, I don't know, the Pittsburgh Pirates that have been bad for two decades now, but they're not being considered for a switch. It's ludicrous. Plus, I mean, have you looked at this plan that is going to do away with divisions altogether and just the top five teams go to the playoffs? Do you really think the owners are going to go for that? I mean, because there's some teams that won't be guaranteed a playoff spot, even if they're good, because, you know, four teams out of the AL East are going to go every year, even though there's no AL East now.
I've seen a couple different plans. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think a lot of it, too, is it's being driven by the bigger market teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees, who year in, year out, they get stuck in either one of them is taking the division title and the other one just by default is the wild card. I think that's what maybe Major League Baseball is trying to avoid, but I just don't see it working out where you have two 15 team leagues. It just would, I don't know. I'm not a fan.
No, I think contraction would be more likely than that to happen. And I don't think they're going to contract anytime soon. So it just bothers me because, you know, and I really enjoyed, Jim Crane's kind of little rant, apparently, about it, talking about how, you know, he bought a team and that wasn't in the contract, and you're not going to just throw this in there now because he's having to go through the approval process. He's going to fight it.
Was this the Cultural Map article that you're referring to?
I believe so, yes.
That's a source with supposed knowledge. That didn't come from Jim Crane. Don't get my podcast in trouble.
Well, that's what I said.
We won't get in trouble.
I mean, you know, that could be the mailroom boy who's saying saying all that stuff and just giving his opinion. That's just his speculation on the whole thing. It certainly makes sense, but it could be a profitable move for Jim Crane.
How?
Yankees coming to town.
How is it profitable at all?
If it's a balanced schedule and the Red Sox and Yankees are coming in, you're going to get a lot of people coming to the ballpark that are Red Sox and Yankees fans.
You're going to get them for exactly the same amount of time that it's a novelty, which is maybe a year, and then they're going to go away. I mean, it's the same concept now. You'd lose the Cubs and the Braves fans.
Right, but I'm talking about a more balanced schedule. Like a balanced schedule, you know, they'd be playing everyone the same amount of time. And would you really be missing out on a whole lot of the Cubs and Brave fans? Because if they have 15 teams in each league, they're going to have to play an interleague.
I still see it as the Astros are going to be gaining something by having, you know, the Red Sox-Yankees draw, and losing something, but with the Cubs and the Braves, which always draw well at Minute Maid Park. You know, we kind of take those guys for granted because they come in every year. But, you know, we were just talking about that earlier in the podcast. How many times do you see, you know, Braves hats and Cubs hats? And it drives me crazy, but it's a draw, and it makes those games more profitable for the ownership. So, yeah, you may still have those with interleague play and all this stuff, but you can't guarantee the same number of games. And that's going to be just like right now with the Yankees and Red Sox coming to town. Yeah, it boosts attendance in the short term for that series, but you can't count on it, and it's not going to affect the team overall. I think it's short-sighted, and I'm really surprised. Well, I'm not surprised that Bud Selig's considering it because he's done some dumb stuff in the past, but I just don't see it working out.
Well, if nothing else, it expands your TV market, right? So for the Astros, who are introducing a new TV network, this could only help expand their market.
How does it expand their market, though?
You have an East Coast market now.
But it's not going to be for their station. It's going to be for the YES Network, which would still broadcast the games.
Right.
I mean, they're not getting anything. It's not like they're going to have the Houston Astro Network to all these East Coast teams, you know, that are suddenly playing here.
Right. I think just more from an exposure standpoint than anything. I get your point.
Look it on ESPN more.
And that's what we want?
I don't know.
That has gotten ridiculous. I think with Jordan Lyles' first start, wasn't even a bleep.
Yeah. I think someone said that he didn't even show up on SportsCenter.
No, yeah. I mean, if he had been a Boston Red Sox or a New York Yankee, that would have been a two-hour special.
Yeah.
Our boy George Springer, he just had a nice basket catch over the shoulder.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that.
While falling, basically, like, just do it rolling into mm-hmm. the wall. He got up yep. a little limpy, but, yeah.
He's okay. All right, well, we've essentially run out of time, so with that George Springer play, we will end the podcast. Do you guys have any last words before I roll through the credits?
Can we get rid of Brandon Lyon anytime soon?
Not by
yeah, how do we push... Yeah, how do we position that?
He's doing what he's doing. He'll knock himself out. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on the TCB podcast.
Bye-bye.